morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Good evening to whoever might be out there listening to Sheldon Joe.
And Scott Kreitzer. Yeah. Rock it out.
Rock it out. A couple minutes late because of a faulty port? What?
I don't know. I literally wasn't touching the thing, and all of a sudden you guys couldn't hear me. It's kind of funny.
I know. It was funny. I know, because we were chatting for a while before the show.
I was sitting there going, trying, and I thought you guys could hear me for a while, and then I realized you couldn't, and whatever. We're back.
Technology. It's all good.
It's all good.
And how are you, Sheldon?
Good. Good, Scott. How about yourself?
Great. Yeah, it's been a while since we've been on live.
Yeah, yeah.
The last two shows were just recordings, but we've both been off doing other things, busy in life, and I think life has been happening to both of us as well.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. So we usually start with a quote from Course in Miracles, since that's supposedly what this show's about, right?
As far as I remember, yeah. It has been over a month, but yeah.
We do some kind of quote in a meditation, and you go first. How's that?
Okay, I will do that. So the quote I picked, again, the theme for today, and this will be an interesting topic. We'll be talking life and death. So it's going to be a very interesting show topic, I think. But the quote I chose was early on in the course. It's in chapter 3 in the text, section 7, paragraph 6. You who fear salvation are choosing death. Life and death, light and darkness, knowledge and perception are irreconcilable. To believe that they can be reconciled is to believe that God and his Son cannot. Only the oneness of knowledge is free of conflict. Your kingdom is not of this world because it was given you from beyond this world. It's almost like a riddle wrapped in a
conundrum.
Conundrum, yes.
With a bow tie paradox or something.
I like how you're about to say Botox.
Okay. Cool. Wow. Okay. So this is a topic is on life and death, right? That's what we're supposed to be talking about today.
That is correct.
So I Googled the lesson 163, there is no death. But at the end of it, it has a little prayer. I kind of like that. It says, "Our Father, bless our eyes today. We are your messengers, and we would look upon the glorious reflection of your love, which shines in everything. We live and move in you alone. We are not separate from your eternal life. There is no death, for death is not your will, and we abide where you have placed us, in the life we share with you and with all living things, to be like you and part of you forever. We accept your thoughts as ours, and our will is one with yours eternally. Amen."
Amen.
That's kind of cool.
A lot of gems in that blue book.
Yeah, there are. There are. So, what's up with this life and death thing?
What's up with it? I don't know. I think that's what... once I think we arrive in this place, that's kind of the struggle that everyone goes through. How do you truly live while you're here? And then for a lot of people, it's the fear of that death thing. Like, what is it? What am I going to experience? And then, of course, experiencing loved ones going through that transition as well. I think it's interesting that we come into this place with a huge level of amnesia around, you know, our true experience in the spirit world. You know, and I always go, well, why is that? Why do we come in here forgetting who we are only to go through these, in some cases, painful experiences, in some cases, you know, beautiful experiences, but trying to relearn that lesson of life and death all over again.
Mm-hmm. And just realizing we didn't do our meditation.
Yeah, that's all right. Maybe we just do a quick little what you think life and death is, and we'll go into the meditation.
There is no death, right? It's just transitions. Yeah. It's like moving through different rooms in a house. It's like changing outfits. It's like this is a dimension of experience, and we're here to experience things. And through those experiences, learning to radiate light and love on all the experiences that we have, regardless of what they seem to be and how they appear to us. That's ultimately, I think, what the journey is all about. And light, love, joy, regardless. But we have experiences that sometimes aren't that pleasant or fun, you know, and the transitions are always difficult, it seems. You know, I guess they don't have to be, but sometimes they're challenging. There's a lot of there's a lot of place for us to learn and grow and to deepen our connection through transition, whether it's transition from one job to another, whether it's transition from one relationship to another, whether it's transition from health to no health or from seeming life to seeming death. I think all of those points are huge opportunities, and you know, it's a beautiful and sometimes challenging thing to face and experience. And you know, my mom just made that ultimate transition 2 weeks ago. So, and she's been on that kind of transition pathway. We all are, but she's definitely been sick and going through it for a couple of years now. So,
yeah, it's
been an intense and beautiful and healing process for all of the family, I think, to kind of go through this, and for myself especially. So that's what kind of became the impetus for this discussion on what does it mean and what's it all about.
So. Yeah, so I figured this would be a very special, important
It'll be cool.
It'll conversation. Be cool. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And thanks for sharing that. I know that, you know, for some people it's, you know, having, especially like a parent pass away can be deeply personal, and I appreciate you sharing that. And I'm sure you're going to share more of your heart as we have this conversation.
Yep, absolutely. Let's rip it open and keep it open.
And that's why I love you, man. You have a huge open heart, and I appreciate that about you.
Thank you, brother. You too. Here we go. Are we going?
We're going. You mean going to do in. The meditation?
We're going in.
We're going in. We're going
dive,
deep.
Dive, dive, dive.
Yeah, and I guess as a way to start that deepening journey, we'll do a guided meditation right now. So go ahead and just get comfortable. Close your eyes. Obviously, if you're driving or doing something where you can't close your eyes and get relaxed, then just do this. You can do this later. Just take a nice deep breath in and just slowly let it out, and just let out any tensions, any concerns. Just let it all out. Just take one more deep breath in, just breathing in any kind of support and love that you may require or need, and just breathe out any tensions or any held ideas or thoughts that might be floating around. Just let it all out. And then today, just imagine yourself fully surrounded by just pure, bright, white light. Just around you, it's in you, emanating from your heart, and just radiating out. And as it does, it just shines the light on the holy guide that's always with you. Some may say Holy Spirit. And just allow that presence to now just join with you. Just notice how that feels, or what it's like, or what you see or hear. And allow this presence to now take you up out from where you're sitting or laying or standing. and just up and out, out past what appears to be this earth, up what appears to be this outer space, this galaxy, and out into the expansive universe. Just notice yourself with this presence there and just keep shining light brighter and brighter until it fills this space completely. Because in the world of spirit, size, time do not exist. And notice in this state what it's like to understand the presence of all of those that have appeared to be apart from you or separate from you, family, that are both in your mind appearing to be living, and those that may have passed on as well, friends, co-workers, people on the earth, others across the galaxy and the universe. Just notice what it's like to just be connected with all of that. And take that awareness with you now with the Holy Spirit to what may appear to be golden white light gates, gates of heaven. And just bring this awareness, this space and time and people awareness with you. And just imagine, if you will, that you can condense all of this down into a ball, this experience of planets and earth and people living and those that may appear to have died. They're all contained in this little ball. And notice now at the gates that there is an altar there. This is the altar before Father, Mother, God. And place this ball on this altar as a gift. It's a gift that you understand that this is just merely a symbol that you've been placing your attention on, and that you would like to now remember what it's like to be completely in heaven with God. You're offering this as a gift to heal, to transform, so that your mind may be joined completely in unity with heaven. And while you're doing this, just notice if there's anything in your awareness or your being that may be still holding on to idea around bodies, idea around death, that may be preventing you from experiencing heaven completely. And then just symbolize that coming out of your awareness and back onto the altar. And just watch all of this dissolve into light. And allow even your own awareness of presence to dissolve into this light on the altar. And maybe you experience feelings around this, and maybe you don't, and that's okay. Just know that you can continue coming to this altar and offering what's in your mind to Spirit, to God. That this is part of the healing process for you and for all. And now take time to give your thanks as you come back into your own awareness of your body and the place that it is in now, just knowing that you can keep this connection anytime you'd like, that this connection is always there. And just start to bring your awareness back to your fingers and your feet, and just start to wiggle them enough that you become more present and aware of where you're at, while still remembering and maintaining that connection back in heaven. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and just join us here again.
Wow. That was cool. That was potent.
What did you experience, Sheldon?
Ooh, I almost was crying. Really beautiful. Felt it in the heart.
Just the whole experience, or when you were at a certain place, or
The experience onto the altar.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. It was just like kind of letting go of everything.
Yeah, I've heard of other, I guess, teachers or meditators will have you offer things on the altar, but I don't know if anyone has suggested that you place your awareness there. It just seems like obvious to me, at least, because if you're the one creating the objects, then you've created the image of yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was powerful. Wow. Thanks, brother.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
So, life and death.
So life and death. So, what is the Course saying about life? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think it gets back to, you know, that's what I love about the Course. It's sort of like any question you have related to anything of our experience in a body, it goes back to the same answer, which is, well, you've made all that up. Your idea of life in a body and your idea of death out of the body is all made up. And that the truth is that you really are spirit. You're just going through some matrix-like experience where you think you're a body that starts as a baby and goes through some age to where you die, but that's not really the truth. You're just being distracted by the ego. Which, you know, maybe with that perspective, and Sheldon, maybe for you having worked with the Course for so many years that, you know, maybe your experience, and I'd love to hear your real experience, is that, you know, when your mother transitioned, it just wasn't as hard as maybe it could have been.
You know, I look at the experiences that we have here, right, as opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opportunities for a kind of deeper unfolding, for a deeper sinking into connection, into oneness, into love, and into a deeper feeling of grace, and a deeper feeling of the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, flowing through you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, some of the experiences that we have, it's hard not to get into judgment, right?
Yeah.
It's hard not to look at that and say, why? Why is that happening? Why does this have to be the way it is? And when you question and analyze for understanding in this world, on this dimension, you know, you will struggle to make sense of it because it doesn't make sense, right? That's what the Course says, that it's an insane mm-hmm. construct.
Yeah.
That part of the riddle of it is it's designed to keep your egoic... that it's designed to keep you stuck, right? That you're stuck in the matrix, so to speak, right? Because you're trying to figure it out, and that kind of game is what hooks you, what brings you out of peace. So how do you look upon the world and everything that you see from a place of greater level of peace and connection in spite of what you happen to be looking at?
Mm-hmm.
And when you judge it, when you get into your thinking, analyzing, judgmental mind, that was what brings you out. So that kind of teaching and experience would happen to me when I would see my mom. She was in, you know, hospice and ended up being long-term care for 3 years, right? Hospice is supposed to be 6 months or less, and she was like 3.5 years.
Right.
And I would see her, and I would see her body kind of deteriorating, and it was hard to watch. It was hard to witness with, you know, and then I definitely noticed that when I would go, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would sit there and, you know, and I was pretty good at being able to be present with her, and not, I mean, it was obviously a practice, not perfect or anything, but there were times when I would get upset while I was with her, but usually I was pretty good at just being there with her. just being there for, you know, with her and sharing that moment. But when I would leave, oftentimes it would be like, why does this have to be happening? You know what I mean? And that question would always send me into a tailspin. That question would always, because it starts the judgment, you know, she's suffering. Da, 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 da. Why is she suffering? Why does this have to happen the way it is? And then that would block the flow of connection to love, which brings peace. And sometimes it would bring up things like guilt, like, oh, I wasn't a good enough son. Or there was definitely one experience where I was talking to her or came up about the drugs that I had done. And that was pretty potent. I mean, it was probably the one of the bigger ones because I, you know, was addicted to drugs for a while, right? So I went through that period where I would be doing smoking crack all night long, and then I would get up in the 3 p.m. take a shower, and I would go over her to her place and have dinner, and she'd cook me dinner, and then I thought I was fine, and then I would go off around 9 o'clock, I got to go home now, and I would go out into the Tenderloin and, you know, buy crack and smoke crack all night long. And then I did this for a long time, and I never thought she knew.
Yeah.
Which is the irony of ironies, right? And of course, she knew. And Jacqueline was always like, your mom, how could she not know? She knows you. She's your mom, you know? And I was like, no, I don't think she did. She never said a word. And then years when she hurt her back and she was still able to sit up and she's sitting there with us and she's like, you know, like those that time when you were doing all those drugs and you kept coming over here for dinner every night.
She said it matter-of-factly, just kind
very matter-of-fact. Yeah. You know, she was just like, and she looks over at Jacqueline like, psh. You know, she looks at me like, yeah, you know, she's like, you thought I didn't know. I knew, but, you know, and I'm just looking at her and my jaw's on the ground and she's just like, of course I knew, you know, and she's just like, but I never said a word, did I? You know, and I was just like looking at her and she's like waving her finger at me. I never said a word, did I? I'm like, no, you didn't, Mom. And she's just like, because I knew that if I nagged you or I bugged you, you would just go away and never come back. And so she had to have the faith and the trust. And she just said, I put as much love as I could into the food that I cooked you so that you could counter it, so that this food would counter whatever you were doing to your body with the drugs you were doing. And that was like almost a year, I'd say, of her doing that. And I was just like, wow, what an unbelievable act of unconditional love and trust and faith.
That is so beautiful. I mean, because when you think of, I think what we teach and what the world says they do, you know, if, you know, parents, at least my parents will always say, well, you know, being a good parent is showing tough love.
Right.
You know, but I think your mom was, you know, and I feel this, like she was sort of she was a master in her own right in many different ways. And this was one of them, which is to fight the urge, like you said, to judge, to try to control, which is a big thing, I think, with parents, and just to love. I mean, that is so beautiful.
Yeah. Incredible, really. Just incredible when I think about it, that, you know, to see your own child spiraling down, to know they're right on the tinkering on the edge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And just say, I'm going to love you. I'm going to feed you with love, and I'm going to trust that all will be okay, because I know that that's the only thing, you know, that matters really, is to release and let go and not try to control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's probably some parents out there that would say that was insane or ridiculous or whatever. But I look at that as the most incredible display of unconditional love.
I think, yeah, that's such a huge, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, that's like a huge course teacher in, you know, living the course, like right there.
Right there in that moment. Mm-hmm. In those many moments, because it was almost a year probably where I was doing that every night practically. Because for me, I was like, wow, if I don't have to make my own food, I'm saving $20 and I can go. buy drugs with it. So, you know, and to see that, right, and to have experienced that, and then she kind of called me out on it. She waved her finger at me a couple times, you know, when she knew I was okay. She's like, you brought that, you know, and I never said a word, did I? And she did it like a couple of times over several dinners with Jacqueline. You know, I never said a word. I bit my tongue. You know, there weren't those moments she wanted to, right?
Yeah.
To see that, right, and to live and experience that and to receive that. And then when she's starting to fade really strongly, the guilt of all of that came up. And the desire to condemn yourself and judge yourself for what you did is intense sometimes. And I came home one night and I was just a wreck. And it was because that thought and that memory of what I quote unquote did to my mom, right? What I put her through. And my egoic desire to attack myself was incredible. And I was just a wreck. And Jacqueline was here and she was really beautifully holding space and, you know, can you forgive yourself? Can you let go? Can you, you know? And at one point I was just like, no, you know, like my mind was raging, like you deserve to be punished. You know what I mean? Like the judge was so intense. Like, how could you as a loving son have done that? You know what I mean? And those thoughts were just racing through my mind. And I was just bawling and wailing and just, it was intense. And like I said, Jacqueline was able to hold space for me and I was able to sort of stay with the breathing and stay with that and, and sort of come back from that. And as much as I was in it, I kind of, there was still that anchored part that knew I was just in something really intense.
Yeah.
And I did not want to give it up. I wanted to punish myself. I wanted to be punished. There's that part of you that felt that. And it took me a couple of hours, I'd say, that night, probably like two and a half hours, I think it was. But it started to finally shift a little bit where, and sometimes it's just, not sometimes, it's really like the tool of just the breath. You know, JM has it called love's breath, right? Jeshua teaches love's breath. You're breathing. I breathe the breath of God. The breath of God breathes me. And it's just really just returning into that flow of breathing and relaxation, right?
Yeah.
Which is a level of acceptance, right? Because you're just relaxing into your beingness in that moment. And to be able to do that, to hold that, to return to that, right? And to connect into breathing and just being. And then the mind and the thought pattern sort of keeps, you know, it's raging for a little bit, but then you start to go into, you're shifting the vibration and then releasing that. And then there's a transition that happens when you finally sort of release it. And I feel like, and I always consider it like getting layers, like it may not be done, it might come back again and again, right? But it's a matter of, I got some pretty, got a pretty good layer there. And I believe that my mom stuck around to allow me to do those things.
Yeah. Kind of like we talked about, cause I mean, I won't get into too much detail, but it sounded like, you know, physically like your mom's body should have stopped at least a year ago.
At least. It was incredible.
Yeah. And it just, I think she was demonstrating, I personally feel like, you know, spirit over matter.
Mm-hmm.
How that will is much more stronger than the body.
Yeah.
And that she was kind of demonstrating that not only for you, but for several other people.
Yeah, for sure. And then she had not wanted any family to be around. That was her expressed desire. We talked about it. And she said, if you had your druthers, if you could pick the moment and do it exactly the way you wanted to, you know, would you want your family all around you or what? And she was like, no, definitely not. You know, I was like, really? And she's like, no, don't want anybody around. You know, it's too much burden and pressure, and I would feel obligated to, you know, stick around or whatever. I'd rather just sort of slide out when nobody was watching, kind of thing. And I was actually shocked by that. I was like, surprised, totally taken aback. But it's like, okay. And so I kind of knew in the back of my head that that was sort of her wish. This was the first weekend where both my brother Hugh and myself were, you know, completely out of the Bay Area. He was in San Diego. I was at Mount Shasta, 5 hours away. He's 7, 8, 9 hours away. And neither one of us was anywhere close. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she left on, you know, the year of the day of an auspicious, you know, lion related day, which is her sign Leo, and the hour of the dog. So from an astrological standpoint, she hit both her day and her year, or out her Chinese astrological hours.
Yeah.
So she kind of hit all these points in a very specific way at a very specific time when neither one of her family members could be around to race to her side. Because from the time she started to struggle to the time she actually transitioned was a couple hours. So had we been anywhere close to the Bay Area, we would have been able to rush home and or rush to her and be there, which she didn't want.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow.
So she kind of hit it, you know, she hit it. And it was like there's a certain mastery displayed in that exit.
Yes.
You know, it's like, wow. And then I, you know, Hugh was with family down. My brother was down, you know, with family. And then I was with my soul family up in Mount Shasta, having a beautiful experience on the side of the mountain, literally on the side of the mountain. And half of the group started howling at the exact moment she was transitioning. Without knowing anything about it, they just felt the urge to howl. So,
yeah.
And we were calling it a release party. Let's go up to the side of the mountain and let go all of our stuff. So we were having our own release party, and she joined the release party and had the ultimate release.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Wow.
We were kind of like, she sort of topped that up. She topped it off.
Again.
She showed us all up. You want release? Watch this.
You young kids, I'll show you.
Yeah, let me show you something about release. So, you know, we cried. You know, it's intense and beautiful, but it's just beautiful. Just beautiful. And, you know, there's still the sadness and the missing of the body and the beingness and, you know, the person, right? And I think that that's natural but also the deeper knowing and feeling of connection, and that we're all connected, you know, we're all one, and she's part of that, and I'm definitely still connected and blessed by her presence, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't have to shift, and in fact, I think it deepens when it's not burdened by bodies and time and space. So the connection can actually feel deeper. It's interesting, but that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is that from a Course perspective? Loving unconditionally, really? Mm-hmm. Isn't that that's what the Course is all about? And surrendering into and letting go and loving unconditionally and loving yourself unconditionally.
Yeah.
And those things get brought up in those processes. I think a lot of times when somebody transitions, we feel guilt. You know, I wasn't a good enough son, or I didn't do this, or oh, that time I yelled, or that time you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, so it brings up opportunities to release and to let go of and forgive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all of those major moments in life, those kinds of things come up. And so it can be really profound.
Right, yeah. And that's where, yeah, I think the Course is very helpful, because not only is it about unconditional love, but really how to heal the roadblocks. And I think we've talked about this before. You know, I've at least personally been learning one where my personality or ego comes up or tries to control the situation or, yeah, like condemn in my mind. And I'm just learning more and more to be like, oh, yeah, I just don't want to feel this way anymore, to think this way anymore. Just I'm handing it over. Call in Holy Spirit. Hand it over. I just don't want this anymore.
Right.
And how much it's changed, at least how I'm personally experiencing what could be, you know, difficult situations, you know, whether it's with family or, you know, at work or things like that. But of course, you know, sometimes I forget too, and I'm reminded of how difficult it is if I try to do things on my own or try to do to go experience things, you know, in fear or judgment.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, Matt Kahn has a teaching where he talks about loving what arises. And that's one that's been really profound for me. And I mean, it's totally consistent with the Course teaching, which is, you know, you either have love or fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything is either, and the Course always says everything is either an expression of love or an expression of fear, right? And if somebody's expressing fear, and it might come out of judgment, condemnation, anger, you know, at you, seemingly at you, right? But you know that that's simply an expression of their fear. You know, what is the appropriate response? It's love.
Yeah.
You know? So, but if they love you, then what's the appropriate response? Love back, right? So the only appropriate response ever is love. And that's kind of how I remember it from the Course perspective. But also, he talks about that from the perspective of yourself. You know, when thoughts come up, they're either loving thoughts or fear-based thoughts. Mm-hmm. So the fear-based thoughts, which are judgment and attack, like how could that person do this or blah, 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 or how could I do this? You know, I'm so stupid, blah, 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 blah. You know, I can't believe I did that, right? Mm-hmm. And you can have the most intense judgmental fear-based thought, right?
Yeah.
But the healing of that doesn't come from more judgment, right? Because that just keeps you in the fear. Like, I can't believe I did that. Da, 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 da. I'm a bad Course in Miracles student, or I'm a bad this, or I'm a bad son. I suck, you know.
Bad husband.
All you're doing is staying in fear, right? You're staying on that side. All the judgment of the bad thought is a further continuation of judgment.
Yep.
So the only way to shift out of the fear-based thinking into the love-based thinking is to love, shift into love. So that's what it's like, just love whatever comes up. You send it love. You know, and he talks about literally blessing it as a kind of a tool, a practice for shifting into that love.
Yeah, or sometimes even more practical. I mean, this happened last night. I was getting into some of my stuff. I was, you know, end of a long week. I was pretty tired. Something came up for me. And then what helps is humor, you know, like Mary was helping me. She started joking about something instead of like, allowing me to just stay focused on the negative. It's like, oh, yeah, and that totally shifted everything.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful practice. That's just like laughter yoga, right? Literally laughing. You can force yourself to laugh and start to shift how you think and how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the humor is a beautiful expression, right? That's cool.
Yeah.
So, loving what arises is kind of cool. And I think that loving what arises, not just in the externally, but internally within your own mind and thought structure.
Yeah. And maybe for some, you know, loving right away is going to be difficult. I would say start with curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
That's great.
But and, learning to love it would be amazing.
Well, you know, you must become again as a child to return to the kingdom of heaven. That's to me what that means, that innocent curiosity. Mm-hmm. So when you look at, you know, unloving thoughts that come up, those are the obstacles to your awareness of love's presence, as the Course says, right? There's an obstacle. Why am I not in a place of love and peace at this moment? Because I'm judging and condemning, right? But so there's an obstacle there. There's something that's causing me to feel like I need to judge in this moment. And what is that? And that's that innocent childlike curiosity, because children don't judge. They just wonder, why is that? You know, with innocence, like, what's that, Mom? Why is that happening? Yeah. Why do you do that?
Why are you angry? Why are you crying?
They drive parents crazy because they're always asking why. Why is that? Why is that? Why do you do that? Why do that? You know? And so, but we have that towards ourselves with the same gentleness, right? Why am I feeling like that? What is that? Where is that coming from? And making those connections and then releasing that. That I totally agree. The childlike wonder is pretty potent, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, versus the adult. I've been through this before. I get to judge it and know right. that this is bad. Yeah, right. that this is, and I, you know, this is bad. That person's bad, or I'm stupid, you know.
Right.
Yep.
So, versus just innocent, joy-filled exploration and release.
Yep.
Beautiful. Awesome. And then also, when you look at death, you can look at that as just release, right?
Yeah.
And we have many deaths. I think it's in the Quran. It says die before you die, right? So you die before you die. Mm-hmm. But there's many stages and many forms of death, which can really just mean a release. Because when you release an old wound by forgiving and releasing, right, and loving and letting go, and like all the things we're talking about, mm-hmm. you no longer are the same person, right?
Yeah. Because
you're literally operating from a different place at that point. So you've died. Old you died, you know, and there's this new place and new radiance and new joy and laughter and love that comes forward. And it still has you, the aspects of your personality to it, right? Because you're in a body and it's flowing through a personality. And you can call that your own unique signature of love, right? How you express love. But the old block to you that had those fears and all that stuff has died. And you do that many, many times. We all do that many, many, many times, and I don't think it ends. Mm-hmm. So,
it doesn't end until it's all kind of done. I mean,
yeah.
Because ultimately, you know, what the ego fears is its own death, because it can't survive, you know, with God in just total love, because the ego made a decision that it can't be part of that, because it
right.
made a choice to create apart from God. So now it's guilty. It is bad. Right. So now I've got to find a way to hide and create all these other bodies and experiences to distract the mind from going back to God.
Exactly, which is also why you have to start exactly where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You have to accept exactly where you are in that mirage, or in that whole game, whatever you want to call it. That's the first aspect of, you know, being okay with where you are. Is like you said, sometimes you can't love things. You know, it's too much, but can you accept it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least accept. And acceptance is an aspect of love. So,
It's like, yeah, just taking, at least figuring out the direction, taking steps towards love. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not like totally embracing it and experiencing it, you know. And that's personally an area that I can continuously strive to work on. But at least if you're taking steps, or absolutely. At least denying the other path, which is the path of hatred or anger or pain, then that's beautiful.
Right. Recognizing the insanity of that path, right? Or the futility of it. Just going, yeah, been here before.
been there, this done one that.
Before.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to get the same result I got last time, which is, you know, pain.
Pain, yeah. Which some people like.
Yeah. which we all like, right?
On some level, yeah. Obviously, cool. If we're coming back here. Yep.
We're habituated to it.
Yes. It's because of that subconscious belief that we made up, which is we deserve pain. We deserve to be out of complete peace and love. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
because we made that bad decision long ago, or seemingly long ago, to separate from God.
Cool. I did the rice experiment at work. Didn't really come up quite so dramatic. They actually thought it did. They actually thought it was noticeable to them.
Yeah, you want to hear something cool? Speaking of your rice experiment, so like the Dr. Emoto, I think, experiment, right? Where you're sending love to rice and sending hatred to another cup.
Right.
I told that your story of what you did to the group, the last group that I managed last year. And a guy told me today he still has his Christmas tree up and it's still thriving because he sends it love every day. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I ran into him. I swear to God, I think it was last week. And he said, yep, my Christmas tree is still up. I keep sending it love every day.
Wow.
That's awesome. And that's because of your story, Sheldon. Yeah.
Isn't that cool how, you know, you share something with people and you're going, ah, that person isn't going to.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, or whatever, and then you just let it go, and it's planting seeds and shifting and helping that echo, that radiance of light, and it's taking hold into people, and it's changing and shifting people.
Yep.
But it comes from your being that, right? You're anchoring that for yourself and then sharing that, and then it shifts things. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's why it's a beautiful thing to realize that, our minds are linked together, and just keep trying to,
and it's in,
bring love into darkness.
Right. And then it's in my personal awakening and surrendering and falling deeper into love. Mm-hmm. And through that radiance of light, it helps other people.
Yep, exactly.
And it's almost like at the point where it doesn't matter to you whether other people are shifted or not. That they shift the most.
Yep, right? Exactly.
Because at that point, it's totally unconditional.
Exactly. Yep.
Even as from like Course in Miracles, like, running a group and saying, oh, you're not doing the lessons, which some of the people I have that haven't been doing the lessons, and there's an aspect of loving unconditionally, but sometimes, saying, hey, if you want to shift, you got to do some things here. And how do you do that? There's an interesting balance in that, because I've tended to get caught up in wanting to force certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's an aspect of control sometimes, I think, which versus, you can still share what your truth is, share what you want, but from a place of absolute unconditional love, and I will love you regardless, but, here's where it is. Here's how I see it, or here's what you might want to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, when you're doing that, they're more receptive.
I completely agree. I finally was taking that approach when I was last with family. We were kind of going through some difficult times. One of our family members was in the hospital for mental illness stuff, and I remember having conversations like that. Just like feeling like very strong intuitive impulses to say something, but instead of just blurting it out, or maybe just like putting it out like a knife, like maybe I would have in the past, like a Scorpio, that Scorpio thing.
Uh-huh.
It was like, hey, I've got, this is just a recommendation. You can do with it what you will. And it just completely lightened up the conversation. Uh-huh. And I felt like people were listening more than yes. in the past. Not that I needed them to listen. It was just like, I just wanted to share what I was feeling, and it felt good to do that. But
that's awesome.
Being more direct about it, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
That's awesome. And that's like, you're like, kind of take what you will, do what you want. This is what I'm thinking. And so it's that point where you've let it go, but you just put it out there that it's most well received.
Yeah.
Whereas when we feel like, you really need to hear this, this is important, right? That's when it's not received. There's an irony in that to me.
Yeah. It is pretty fun. It's amazing how that works. Yeah.
It's like when you most let it go, it shifts the most.
Yeah. And speaking of letting it go, I think we're near the top of our hour. So I think we'll let go of our time to to another voice, another show.
And I wanted to make a quick plug. So yep. artsunitymovement.com. Check us out on our calendar and our Facebook page. We're hosting a couple of events. One of them is going to be the screening of A Course in Miracles documentary called Enlightenment or Bust. And it's, I'm kind of embarrassed. Craig Villarubia. And he's a pretty well-known speaker and teacher of The Course in Miracles, and he's traveling around the country screening his movie. We're going to be screening it on Saturday, September 12th at 7 p.m., Arts Unity Movement, 149 South Boulevard in San Mateo, California. And then on the following Saturday, September 19th, Lisa Lipp, she goes by Gongster, and you can go to www.gongster.com, and she's a sound healer using gongs. So she's going to be doing a sound healing workshop experience at our center at 7 p.m. on Saturday the 19th, September. So Saturday the September 12th, Course in Miracles Enlightenment or Bust documentary, Saturday, September 19th, Healing Vibrations with Gongster.
Awesome. So if you're in San Mateo, go check it out.
Yeah. Awesome, yeah. Awesome.
Well, once again, Sheldon, it's been great connecting again, and love you, brother.
Love you, brother. It's always great talking to you.
And much love to everybody out there.
Bye.